In the studio this morning, I have Klaus Busselman. Professor Busselman is the founding director of the New Zealand Centre of Environmental Law at the University of Auckland. Before coming to New Zealand in 1989, he was a judge and law professor in Berlin. In 1980, he co-founded the Greens in Germany. And in 1990, the Greens in New Zealand. He has been a delegate at the two World Summits on Sustainable Development in Rio in 1992 and Johannesburg 2002, and was involved in negotiating the first Earth Charter at the 1992 Rio Global Forum. He later served as a legal advisor to the Earth Charter Drafting Committee. Since the adoption of the Earth Charter in 2000, Klaus has been promoting the Charter's recognition among states and its implementation in Germany and in New Zealand. He is chair of Earth Charter Aotearoa New Zealand and co-chair of the Environmental Law Commission Ethics Special Group for the World Conservation Union, is advocating the endorsement of the Earth Charter when at the 2004 at the World Congress in Bangkok he was particularly involved. So welcome, kia ora, and thank you very much for coming to the show, Klaus.
Kia ora, Tim. Pleasure being here, and thank you for having me.
Klaus, the Earth Charter, many people don't know about it. We hear of the United Nations and the Declaration of Human Rights, but we don't know much about the Earth Charter at all. And when I've looked at what it means, it's a very profound document. I'm very impressed. Mm-hmm. Would you be able to tell us how you came to be involved in starting it off?
There's a long history behind the Earth Charter. There are, of course, many, many thousands of us who had some direct or indirect connections with it, but you really would have to start early on, even as early as 1945, when the United Nations Charter was drafted. At that time, there was a considerable interest to include environmental matters into social and economic concerns that are the fundaments of a peaceful world, you see. Instead of having this introduced into the Earth Charter and into the United Nations Charter, a few years later, the World Conservation Union was established under the auspices of the United Nations with memberships of states and many hundreds of environmental organizations. So you really have to go back that far to sort of detect the origins of what later became the Earth Charter. There are a number of steps, of course, that had to be taken. And my own involvement only started in 1992, as I think mentioned during the Rio Earth Summit, when we drafted a very first rudimentary form of the Earth Charter. But, of course, you get there only through a certain degree of experience as an environmental activist. In my case, coming from Germany, I was lucky enough to grow up in a forest. I'm a really country boy, and naturally had sort of direct exposure to everything nature. And then later on, it was quite obvious for me to pursue a career following the footsteps of my father and interest in law, a legal career that makes sense. And a legal career, to me, only makes sense if it's associated with passion for justice. So fundamentally, I think the environmental issue is about achieving justice for the non-human world. So that's how it sort of started. First as a judge, we had, of course, our very strong environmental and anti-nuclear sentiments in Germany in the 1980s. One highlight was that we organized a blockade of U.S. Nuclear missile transports in Germany, symbolically saying we do not want them, we think that this is unconstitutional. And so we were, as judges, upholding the law and at the same time breaching it for some higher purpose. And we got all arrested and so forth. So I think it's very typical for my generation. Mind you, I'm not the youngest anymore. My generations that sort of shaped the Green Party is to combine our professional experience with our environmentalism. So that has never changed. Hopefully in my case that you see now good scholarship combined with environmental activism. Now back to the Earth Charter, of course a lot can be mentioned there in terms of how it originated, but really the highlight was then during the Rio negotiations how a global civil society really for the first time in any tangible way in their thousands and thousands gathered together and drafted the first concept of an Earth Charter in response to the complete failure of states doing so. So you have to realize that the Earth Charter is not being invented just by environmentalists and so on. It's really insisting on unfinished business that had to be completed. States themselves were under the guidance of the Brundtland Report, the famous one from 1987, United Nations Commission on Environment and Development, spelling out the philosophy of sustainable development, if you like, but also calling specifically for a new charter and a new ethic that states had to consider. And the United Nations had some initiatives getting states together to negotiate an Earth Charter, which it was called that way. Instead, there was no sufficient common sense, consensus among negotiators, and instead they decided to first have a summit. And this is the Rio summit. It was really the result of not really wanting to move too quickly to a commitment towards sustainable development and to the sentiments expressed by the Brundtland Report and by those who have been campaigning for sustainability. So that's how the mandate ultimately came from. And now, nearly 15 years later, we could say that global civil society is emerging strongly, forcefully, within limits. You would have to define further what we mean by civil society, and the Earth Charter cannot claim to be the leading document of civil society, but of all the various international documents trying to spell out the key values and principles in relationship to a just, sustainable and peaceful future. The Earth Charter has been the most comprehensive document, has been drafted by more organizations and people than any other international document that we know of. Now, you mentioned, Tim, that the Earth Charter is not very well known, and this is very rightly, this is certainly the case, considering that more than 50 countries have national campaigns running. And, of course, in this day and age, with websites everywhere and the communications going around the globe, one would have expected more publicity for the Earth Charter. And, in fact, there has been an extensive report being written by the headquarters of the Earth Charter, currently in Stockholm. There are two now. One is in Costa Rica, now the Educational Center for the Earth Charter, and the other one's been recently established in Stockholm, Sweden. So this review showed that the difficulty to communicate to the Earth Charter to the wider public has a lot to do with the no news aspect that the Earth Charter really is associated with. There's nothing really new under the sun in a dry document like the Earth Charter, no matter how inspirational it may be, is still only a document that needs to be put to life. So media, of course, are just only eager to report actual news that you can see and touch and so on. That's one reason. The other one is more of political nature. The reception of the Earth Charter within business circles and government circles has naturally been a very reluctant one, because they're simply not used to be exposed to a sort of that kind of document that comes with a claim to represent cultures and religions and people across the world like no other document does.
And be responsible.
And be responsible, of course. That's something that they love to talk about, but nevertheless, responsibility might be a very closely defined concept for a politician, for a businessman, and so forth. This is about more fundamental responsibilities.
Yes, yes. Because it says, we the people of the earth join together in a global partnership and pledge. Number one, respect earth and life and all its diversity. And I'll just read this out. Recognize that all beings are interdependent and every form of life has value regardless of its worth to human beings. And B, affirm faith in the inherent dignity of all human beings and the intellectual, artistic, ethical, and spiritual potential of humanity. I mean, these principles are all-encompassing in many ways, and of course, then you look at the earth itself, and that's a very profound statement.
Now, the Earth Charter is trying to bring together all the various values in a diverse world that together make up the core set of values and principles that can be commonly applicable to people regardless where they live. Now, this is quite an ambitious task, and the way to achieve it was through a very complex dialogue, very conferences and website conferences and so forth. Now, what the result of this is now is an effort to identify those core values and principles in a way that it can be accessed virtually by all levels of society, by all various cultures, as we realize that the values, we are talking about 77 different principles that are set out in the Earth Charter, that they all can be shared and supported in one way or another by all these diverse groups.
Yes.
So briefly introduce to the structure, because I think one of the beauties about the Earth Charter is it is a relatively short document, 77 principles, but they are organized around four main themes, and each theme has four major principles, and each of these main principles has several supporting principles. And what you just quoted, Tim, are some of the first principles. The first theme is about respect and care for the community of life. Now, this is really the essence of the message of the Earth Charter. At the end of those first four principles, you have then the sentence to say, in order to fulfill these four broad commitments, it is necessary to. So once you've spelled out your sense of respect and care for the community of life, everything else follows from that. So the appreciation of the Earth Charter hinges on the very first theme, namely respect for life in all its various forms. That's just one single sentence can be seen as summing it all up. And this in itself is very provocative.
Yes, yes. Well, can I go back one step to the preamble? It says, we stand at a critical moment in Earth's history, a time when humanity must choose its future. As the world becomes increasingly interdependent and fragile, the future at once holds great peril and great promise. To move forward, we must recognize that in the midst of a magnificently diversity of cultures and life forms, we are one human family and one earth community with a common destiny. We must join together to bring forth a sustainable global society founded on respect for nature, universal human rights, economic justice, and a culture of peace. Towards this end, it is imperative that we, the peoples of Earth, declare our responsibility to one another, to the greater community of life, and to future generations. That's a real potent preamble.
It's potent, it's poetic, and it is very, very true fundamentally, according to anthropologists, historians, theologians, who would tell us that one of the makeups of humanity since we know of civilization, say 11,000 years, has been a tendency and the ability for people to make promises to each other. And that's usually referred to as a covenant. A covenant is something where people commit to a common purpose. And that seems, according to anthropologists, a common theme that makes us very human. We can't actually live without wanting to achieve something in company with our fellow human beings. So this is not for no reason that the preamble starts with this observation. We stand at a critical moment, is reminding how we are all sharing one fate, and how we are all, in order to meet the challenges, are bound to make these mutual promises. It seems very logical to most of us. And one of the intriguing or perhaps disturbing things is when you discuss the Earth Charter, even with politicians and business people, you hardly ever hear any criticism in terms of, you know, that's fundamentally flawed or wrong or sort of extremist or whatsoever. Inevitably, the kind of response you get is nodding and yes and fine. And then they walk away from it.
And in business as usual.
And it's business as usual. You can ask, why is it? Maybe it is again a very human feature of us that we have a tendency to believe in the highest values that we are sort of capable of, and yet we are constantly sort of stuck in patterns. And one of the patterns that I certainly detect among government circles is you listen to certain people, you listen to certain perceived needs, as you perceive them, mind you. Your voters are the ones that are supposed to re-elect you in a few years' time and so forth, and usually when somebody comes with promises, say more jobs now and more economic prosperity within in the near future, this seems to be something that they are more interested in, because they listen to those people who make those promises more easily than to others who are concerned with long-term developments. So short-term, put it that way, capitalism has been a highly successful mechanism. Long-term, it has been definitely the most disastrous and destructive economic mechanism that we could possibly ever think of. So what we are struggling with as the Earth Charter movement internationally and here in Aotearoa is really how can we all adopt this sense of urgency, which we seem to be able to adopt a lot easier than perhaps 15 years ago. There doesn't seem to be denial anymore that we are at crossroads and things are very, very serious. But there still is denial of the impacts and of the consequences of those phenomena like climate change and so on, and how to crack this kind of denial, not wanting to see what needs to be done. This is the real challenge, of course.
I agree. I think the media doesn't want to grapple with it at all, and the sports pages and the entertainment pages, always full. But when it comes to... Now, I have here from the Earth Charter, it talks about the global situation. The dominant patterns of production and consumption are causing environmental devastation, the depletion of resources, and a massive extinction of species. Communities are being undermined. The benefits of development are not shared equitably, and the gap between rich and poor is widening. Injustice, poverty, ignorance, and violent conflict are widespread and the cause of great suffering. Well, this we do know. An unprecedented rise in human population has overburdened ecological and social systems. The foundations of global security are threatened. How does democracy come in over the top of this if we have our servants in Wellington, and the servants are supposedly in every main capital in the Western world anyway? How do we make that connection with our servants to say, do we give them a performance clause every year and ask them to perform to that clause? And
well, it would help to start to look at the Earth Charter itself. Simply, it talks a lot about democracy as an essential prerequisite for sustainability. The fourth part of the Earth Charter has, in principle 13, main principle 13, for example, talks about strengthen democratic institutions at all levels and provide transparency and accountability in governance, inclusive participation in decision-making, and access to justice. Now, we are talking about a participatory democracy and not a purely representative democracy to start with. And it would not be unconstitutional in Aotearoa, for example, to strengthen those grassroots and participatory elements, not only by means of the referenda, but simply by a government being put into a situation where they start listening. We have a culture here of consultation, but everybody who has been ever consulted will probably agree that consultation is pretty much a writing of submissions and a thank you, and then it sort of disappears in the system. Consultation, certainly according to the Aarhus Convention to introduce a international treaty from 1999 that sets out the standards for good governance, transparency, and true democracy. Many European countries are signatories to it, not New Zealand, even though New Zealand could be a signatory to it. Now, the Aarhus Convention is very serious about consultation and says consultation is only possible in a spirit of partnership. And partnership has been promoted at international level since 1992. Agenda 21, the so-called blueprint for sustainable development in the 21st century, has been adopted, that means signed by governments around the world. And Agenda 21 is all about partnerships, all about recognition of civil society groups, such as women, youth, employed, unemployed, indigenous people, usually those groups that are vulnerable. So they are specifically singled out as the true partners of governments, governments being perceived, obviously, as potentially representing the more powerful ones and not so much the powerless ones. So you have, even in Agenda 21, the recognition of a world that has powerful institutions like governments and big business on the one hand side and civil society groups on the other. The Earth Charter, for one, does nothing less than being a voice for the ones who are not heard in our current system. In particular, the voice of future generations, unborn children, or the voice of the non-human world, of animals and plants. They are all there. We see them every day. We are depending on them. And yet they do not have a voice in our current democratic representative institutions. This is not to say that democracy is bad or ill-defined. It's simply not practice. At the time when it was invented in Athens some 3,000 years ago, it was certainly possible to perceive just a few thousand, namely about 8,000 Athenians, to be capable to come together and make decisions on a true democratic basis, even though there has been aristocracy at the time. But the roots of democratic traditions are there and have been followed through until today, certainly with a lot of success as far as these things go, but at no instance of its history democracy had to face such fundamental challenges as it has to face now, everything to do with the globality of problems. Democracy was invented for small communities, and all of a sudden we have a global community. So a lot more is needed than just, you know, preaching the gospel of parliament being the sovereign of the country and so forth. So I think the intelligence of documents such as the Earth Charter is to make the connections. Democracy has a serving function. It should guarantee, facilitate that everybody has a say, or that the people actually are governing. It further has a very important function of providing equality and transparency of decision in the decision-making process. And furthermore, democracy is linked to a number of other important institutions and values, such as human rights, such as justice, social justice, and also ecological justice. So fundamentally, democracy has a challenge ahead of it. You know, we can easily identify a crisis of democracy. It's been talked about a lot. But rather than sort of throwing out the baby with the bathwater, there is sort of obviously nothing better yet. Maybe there will be one day in the distant future. But so a first prerequisite, but not more than that, is a functioning democracy in order to have informed decision-making processes.
Yes, because here at the moment we're flooded with different type of media. And so lots of people are sitting home now in 42-inch plasma screens watching all sorts of television or concerts, and they're not inclined to get up and go to a meeting place to discuss ideas, whereas possibly in Athens, that was where everybody met each other, and it was quite very dynamic, whereas now everybody's too busy doing all their indulgences or taking care of family and kids and sport and all this sort of thing, and survival, sleeping because they're too tired. They haven't got the time now, so it's a major challenge.
We're all suffering from those kind of things, and yet, of course, we are not dismissing our responsibility. It's our single individual life, and how do you live the good life? And ultimately, nobody can be ignorant of the fact to be serious with one's values. I think the prevailing mode that we seem to be in is to appreciate the enormous importance for our lives, of families, for example, and our children, and our friends, and those immediate social relationships, our communities. They are very precious, and nobody would ever want to give up this. And I find it quite remarkable that here in New Zealand, according to OECD studies, those kind of values, social relations, are far superior to economic prosperity or money. This is a very good starting point, so to speak. I think what we all have to allow ourselves is just we need to sort of open ourselves to the reality. And reality is not what comes off this little plastic box and news programs and so forth. It's so painstakingly obvious to see that the media really are contrary to what their name indicates. They're not sort of mediating anything, a message or news that's sort of to be reported to us. This is perhaps the idyllic situation of some 50 years ago where we had just a radio and newspapers and not the total commercialization of public life. Media automatically are part of the problem or part of the solution. You would be obviously with your program being part of the solution, but you know, this is a minority program. Most media are part of the problem because they're simply responding to what they perceive to be the immediate needs of their consumers. And why is it that consumers are basically unhappy but nevertheless quite happy with watching TV? I mean, nobody gets really sort of satisfaction of, you know, being exposed to this shallow entertainment. But they don't know anything much better. You know, they don't probably know how to better spend their time. And this comes down to those kind of values that are presented and lived in communities, in particular families and schools. And this is where the Earth Charter, to a large degree, is hoping to find resonances with real people in their real lives, on the one hand side, and schools and universities and so forth. And a lot can be said about successes in that area. If I might just alert the listeners to the fact that we are at the beginning of the United Nations decade for education of sustainable development that has been launched last year, 2005. And this is a campaign that's been initiated by UNESCO and has been adopted by 90 countries, including New Zealand. New Zealand has a national committee to promote education for sustainable development and so forth. Now, the strange thing is that the Earth Charter has been endorsed by UNESCO as the leading document to guide the education of values and ethics for sustainable development. So as far as the international institution UN is concerned, the Earth Charter is to be a guiding document for our sustainable, peaceful future to be used in schools, at universities, and so forth. And I find it rather disturbing that we have a situation here where there's a lack of commitment on the part of the New Zealand government with a national committee that is consisting of respectable people but do not take notice of this. And when you mentioned at the beginning why is the Earth Charter not widely known, it has to do with this phenomenon that in governance and with sort of committee members, if they are not sort of doing their research properly, they just respond to kind of immediate needs that they've been given, the briefing that comes from government and so forth. And somehow along the line, when the endorsement of the UNESCO took place with a lot of enthusiasm 2 years ago, and now on a day-to-day basis promoting those values that are so crucial, the Earth Charter message got lost. And you could sort of blame people, you could blame institutions here in New Zealand, but fundamentally, it seems to be the problem that there is no sort of, if you like, willingness. It's not a genuine spirit of wanting to learn what sustainable development is.
Yeah, no passion behind it at all. It's something that they want to get beyond or something.
The passion is there. We had this launch here in Auckland in March 2005 when there were government officials, bureaucrats and business people and nice speeches, and there was a spirit of passion. Everybody who has some dealings with education for sustainability is inherently passionate. Just happens to that those who are in the decision-making positions,
yes,
they seem to lose their passion very easily on the next day when they get home to their bureaucratic institutions.
Yes. Oh. Well, what I'd like to do is we'd like to have some music, but first I want to talk about Earth, our home. This is the higher ideal of the Earth Charter. Humanity is part of a vast, evolving universe. Earth, our home, is alive with a unique community of life. The forces of nature make existence a demanding and uncertain future, but Earth has provided the conditions essential to life's evolution. The resilience of the community of life and the well-being of humanity depend upon preserving a healthy biosphere. With all its ecological systems, a rich variety of plants and animals, fertile soils, pure water and clean air, the global environment with its finite resources is a common concern of all peoples. The protection of Earth's vitality, diversity and beauty is a sacred trust.
Yeah, Mozart could have been one of the authors of the Earth Charter, really. The spirit of the Earth Charter is very much the spirit in which Mozart was able to write. And this piece, I think, expresses something that we all can immediately relate to. The lightness and the sheer joy of being alive, and also the depth and the sadness and the grief about personal experiences, about the fate of the life. It captures it all, but it captures it in a organic way, so to speak. And the Earth Charter is really trying to not make big promises, but remind us of our fragility as human beings, and of course of our enormous creativity and our enormous sense of beauty. I mean, something that we should be endlessly proud of as human beings, as opposed perhaps to animals, because we might not know it any better, but let's assume that we are the only species that can truly use all the senses to enjoy and celebrate the beauty that we are surrounded by every day. So the Earth Chart is trying to communicate this, and it does it in a language that hopefully appeals to people, has been translated to now 50 different languages. Each language has an own style to absorb the message. I was involved in drafting the German translation of the Earth Charter, and I found the German Earth Charter much headier than the English version, which is a bit using a language that's closer to our hearts, perhaps even to my heart. I enjoy speaking English a lot more because it's sort of closer to the heart, I feel, than languages like French or German. But nevertheless, each culture and each language has a possibility to absorb the Earth Charter in its own way. Now, the charter is a invitation for people and groups and institutions to help translating the message, the values and the principles of sustainability in the various contexts. And since we have been operating here in New Zealand 2001 as Earth Charter Aotearoa New Zealand, or ECANS, we have engaged in Maori groups, church groups. For example, there are a number of congregations across the country that have translated the Earth Charter to very tangible tick-off lists. For example, you could imagine there are sort of 30 things you should be doing if you are a good, gentle, global citizen in your community, such as, you know, recycling and being mindful of your consumer behavior, leaving the car at home if possible, little things, big things. And those church communities in some instances had these sort of three boxes done, not yet done, but almost, and then not being dealt with yet. And this is a little bit of a monitoring system to see whether progress can be made. There are other means, practical means, how people can translate those values to their own lives. You should measure what you're doing by clicking, for example, to the website of the Ministry for the Environment, which has a link to ecological footprints. So each citizen of New Zealand would be perfectly capable to figure out what their individual ecological footprint is, and thereby sort of taking record and see whether any progress can be made by saving more energy or changing your food and nutrition habits, transport and so on. It's another way to sensitize yourself. But then in other ways, we have been promoting the Earth Charter as a guidance for drafting codes. Codes, for example, for Auckland University. I was involved in drafting the environmental policy for the University of Auckland in the late 1990s, been adopted in 1999, and the policy clearly reflects the Earth Charter principles. We have been drafting the policy with the Earth Charter in mind. Our problem as academics or at university at large is that it totally lacks implementation, and this has a lot to do with the kind of political and economic environment that universities are operating in. They tend to be more short-term than upholding their traditional role as a critical consciousness of society. But we have other examples of schools where the Earth Charter has been translated to a local charter, including the drafting of curricula in some schools has been done in accordance with the Earth Charter. Professional organizations have been inspired by aspects of the Earth Charter, like the groups of social responsibility of engineers, or other way around, engineers for social responsibility. The Royal Society of New Zealand has made amendments to its own statutes and mission statements reflecting sustainability as a core value, and certainly those who have amended those statutes had the Earth Charter in mind, either directly or indirectly. So it comes, you know, there are a lot of instances where we can see that principles are coming through and people start to think about it and work and change accordingly. At the moment, here in New Zealand, we have another step forward into sort of disseminating the Earth Charter in a more, if you like, professional manner. There is a national network of some 80 business and academic groups established last year called Sustainable Aotearoa New Zealand, or SANS. And this network of sustainability groups has incorporated now the ECANS, our Earth Charter Aotearoa New Zealand group, and together we now have a much better platform to spread the message, including talking to government. We are in a dialogue situation with some government departments as a group SANS, so we are hopeful that we can achieve the breakthrough, and the breakthrough is measured by ECANS in terms of New Zealand endorsing the Earth Charter, which the New Zealand government has not done yet. A number of other states have done so, the Netherlands, some Scandinavian countries, but not New Zealand, quite contrary to the brilliant reputation that New Zealand has internationally. For some reason, it hasn't been coming through here, but we, of course, are ever optimistic and hope that we get an endorsement from government sometime soon.
Oh, I see. Well, what can New Zealanders do to be able to bring through the Earth Charter a little more, so that our government, if we passed it through the New Zealand government, that would be a major feather in our cap, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would not take much. Endorsement is a legal term and means identifying with the goals and basic principles of the Earth Charter, not necessarily with all its specific contents. And that's why international organizations have done so, and a number of states as well, and of course many, many thousands of NGOs, including business. So it's not a major step to actually identify with the Earth Charter values and principles. It is a further step to implement it into the design of policies and be serious about the cross-sectional character of sustainable development, for example. This has, of course, far-reaching implication for the way we govern a country, the way how the laws are being drafted, and so on. That's why perhaps governments tend to shy away from, you know, really incorporating the Earth Charter. But nevertheless, in practical terms, every New Zealander has, of course, the technical ability to access the Earth Charter and the surrounding literature by going to the website to start with. The website, if I may, is www.earthcharter.org.nz, Earth Charter one word. So say it again, www.earthcharter.org.nz, and then you are linked to our national system and linked automatically to other countries and the global system. And the rest is pretty much up to each of us in their local communities. What we like to see is that the Earth Charter gets communicated in New Zealand not in a centralized manner, but rather it should be owned by communities. It's, of course, totally up to everybody to sort of look around in their communities and say, hey, have you looked at this? And how about redrafting our local statutes or bylaws? Or how about making a commitment, a mutual commitment? Or what about the council endorsing the Earth Charter? I live on Waiheke Island, and those things can very quickly be communicated. And Waiheke has been one of the first communities endorsing the Earth Charter, and we hope that many others are following.
Very good. We only have a minute or so to go. And I'd like you to sum up just quickly, if what would you like to see happen possibly over the next few months, year or two?
Oh, let's make it straightforward. Sweden has just adopted a policy to get rid of oil by 2020.
Yes.
And this has triggered enormous fantasy, enormous commitment by many. We need something similar, a clear target that can be communicated, that's convincing, and the rest will, I think, look after itself.
Excellent. Oh, well, that's putting New Zealand on the line. And I feel it's important because we have the ability to communicate with so many countries now. English is a common language, so we've got the information instantly. And
I'll tell you what, the Queen of Beatrix the Queen Beatrix of the Netherlands at a conference in Amsterdam about the Earth Charter that I attended in November came up after speeches and so forth, the reception, and told me right straight into my face and said, look, we certainly expect New Zealand to endorse the Earth Charter, like we others said, because New Zealand is one of the hopes of humanity, literally her words, one of the hopes of humanity. You can contemplate why that is so, and I think it's basically true. We have a unique situation of Maori indigenous people and Pākehā people coming together. And if it cannot be done here, where on earth should it ever be done?
Well said. I agree. Klaus, thank you very much for coming to share with us the Earth Charter. It needs to be out there everywhere. And I'm just trusting that people will also write and get in contact with their MP to essentially drive the point home that we need to take steps now, if not for us, at least for our kids.